Hey guys,
this is Zach.
This is Stuart,
and this is the Backrow Super Show. This is a main show topic.
Yeah, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about your choice. This is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, or Fuck You Back Row, or
Fuck You Front Row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For anyone that doesn't know, this movie does have a long history of when you see it at the midnight show, there's an alternate script that the audience can have in shouting out lines at the screen.
Yeah, and usually the script is downloadable. A lot of people have it in like a Word file, so in case you don't know what to shout or you haven't been there a lot, you can always just like read it online or download it and print it out if that's your jam.
Yeah.
And know when to yell, what to yell.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, so this movie, we'll just go through a little bit of history first, and then we'll talk about our experiences with the movie and other things.
Yeah, also, from the very beginning, we probably should have said this, bad words are going to be used.
Yes.
Lots of bad words.
Yes.
So.
And also spoilers, but this movie is also almost 40 years old at this point.
Exactly.
Came out in 1975, so if you haven't seen it yet,
what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, you should get to a midnight showing because this movie is totally worth it. Spoilers. But spoilers are in effect.
Yeah, and bad words are in effect.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, the original budget for this movie was $1.4 million, which was pretty standard for the time.
Yeah.
Just for a whatever sized movie. And then the box office, which is a little tricky, which I'll get into.
Yeah.
The box office is $140.2 million. I could not find whether that was total or not. Well, I'll start with the history of the film. So, originally shot in the UK at Bray Studios and at Oakley Court, which is where Hammer Productions was based. I don't know if you know what Hammer Productions are.
I do not.
They were a kind of a horror film studio. They had a television in England. It's they put out kind of schlocky 70s horror movies.
Like, oh, okay.
Christopher Lee is Dracula, stuff like that.
Hmm.
A lot of props were actually from the Hammer Horror film since they were shooting at Oakley Court.
I can envision that, yeah.
Yeah. The movie, when it came out, was critically panned. Roger Ebert gave it 2.5 stars.
Oof, that's rough.
It developed a midnight movie following largely in New York City in 1976, with the audiences cosplaying in theater and then shouting at the screen. This is kind of the blueprint for the shadow cast that it would turn into.
Okay.
Pittsburgh actually started the shadow cast, which is lip syncing the movie and performing the film live. So a lot of times when you go to a midnight showing of Rocky Horror now, there will be actors and right in front of the screen on the floor in the theater performing the movie in tandem as a play almost, but they're lip syncing with the movie. So they're not shouting over the,
yeah, so you're not, like, saying lines or anything all along those lines. You're just basically lip-flapping to the movie that's playing above you.
Yeah.
But, again, you're still acting. You're still going through the motions with other people.
Yeah. Now, the reason I said it's difficult for me to find what the true box office numbers are is that this is actually the longest running release in film history.
Yes.
It has never been pulled from release by 20th Century Fox from its original 1975 release. So,
which is crazy.
Yeah, it's still in limited release regularly 40 years later.
Yeah. And again, those are the like midnight showings and
stuff. Yeah, those
like
are
that.
Midnight showings, student showings, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually chosen in 2005. 2005 for preservation in the U.S. National Film Registry by the Library of Congress.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's
the only
really
other
cool
movie that we've chosen so far that's had that distinction is Rosemary's Baby.
Baby. Mm-hmm. Which, if you haven't listened to, you should definitely listen to because that was a great episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Richard O'Brien is the person who wrote this. He plays Riff Raff in the film. He's the creepy butler.
Yeah.
he wrote the Rocky Horror Show, which The Rocky Horror Show references the stage version. Rocky Horror Picture Show, obviously, is the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote the Rocky Horror Show one winter while he was unemployed just to occupy himself. he combined old sci-fi tropes and horror movies with 50s, like 50s like aesthetics with glam rock, which was really huge at the time that he wrote it.
Yeah. And if you've seen the movie, you can sort of see these particular themes within the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the when it was originally staged, it was actually, I want to say for about a week, promoted as They Came from Denton High. The director of the play, however, changed the movie, or not the movie, changed the name to The Rocky Horror Show because he felt that it had more...
Pizzazz
to it than They Came from Denton High, because I mean, that sounds like a 50s Z movie.
Yeah. You
know? Like, that doesn't sound like something anyone would want to see.
Yeah, but The Rocky Horror Show.
Yeah, it's like, what is Rocky Horror? Who is Rocky Horror?
Yeah.
They went quickly from 60-person theaters to 1,000-seat theaters in about 18 months, wow. Which you have a theater background. That's a huge jump.
Yeah, that's a giant jump, and, it shows that they were doing something good.
Yeah. In stage productions, actors did their own makeup. For the film, they hired Pierre LaRoche, who was the costume designer for Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. you know, almost all of the original London cast were used in the film. Fox insisted when they were going into production that they use Americans for Brad and Janet, which is probably smart, considering that it's supposed to take place in America and it's an American film,
exactly,
being shot for Americans. Susan Sarandon actually got sick with pneumonia during filming, so all of her lines in the movie are re-recorded with ADR.
Oh,
if you notice, whenever she's talking with a group of people, her lines even now sound slightly different because they were re-recorded later.
Huh.
Let's see. Sue Blaine was the costume designer. She was not interested in doing any of this movie until she found out that Tim Curry, who was an old friend of hers, was really into doing this movie.
Yeah.
So, this is a movie. It's got a $1.4 million budget.
Yep.
What do you think her costume budget was for this big movie?
I'm not sure. Maybe $100,000?
$1,600.
Ooh,
U.S. So, Columbia's gold sequin costume and Magenta's maid outfit are the only thing that are brand new to the film. Everything else is replica from the stage play.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Which I think adds to the atmosphere.
It does.
Like, it's very different. Let's see. Some other trivia I have here is that the lips in the opening are Patricia Quinn's, who she played Magenta.
Yep.
And then Richard O'Brien's voice coming out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, originally, due to very low audience attendance, the premieres of this movie were canceled in 8 cities by Fox. They were the renting the actual celluloid was discounted for college campuses, but they still had no audiences when they would show.
Oh, no. That's not good.
A random Fox executive saw a midnight showing of Pink Flamingos and Reefer Madness, which are two kind of cult movies. Like, my dad has mentioned having seen Reefer Madness on a college campus when he was in college in the
70s. I've never seen Reefer Madness.
It's an old Don't Do Drugs Kids movies from the 30s, I want to say, that the U.S. government paid for.
Yeah.
That it portrays marijuana as alternately crack cocaine and heroin in terms of its effects. Which is very untrue. And so, it was redone as a musical, Reefer Madness the musical, with like Alan Cumming and Kristen Bell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another one of these, like, midnight classics or whatever. Pink Flamingos is a John Waters movie that's notable for being very disgusting. The drag queen Divine actually eats a piece of dog shit on film.
Really?
Like, a fresh steaming one that you see.
Ew.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, yeah, like, John Waters is a trashy, trashy dude. I say that lovingly because his movies are pretty funny, but like, they're... Huh. Like, these are the types of movies that were getting midnight screenings on college campuses.
Yeah.
And so this Fox executive, who I could not find the name of, said, I know how we'll sell this movie. And so offered a bunch of discounts to these people who were wanting to put on, like, midnight showings of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Rotten Tomatoes has an 80%.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Especially considering Roger Ebert gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars.
Yeah.
In its original release.
And is that the, so the Rotten Tomatoes score, is that the,
that's the
user
audience
score?
Yeah, yeah, audience, yeah, score. Now, it's got a huge fan following. This is a pretty historic movie in terms of it being very open with sexuality.
Yep.
And gender identity, mm-hmm, and all of the things that now I feel like maybe not necessarily are taken for granted, but certainly in 1975 they were not,
yeah,
things
they were,
that you would talk about.
They were taboo.
Yeah,
people,
very taboo.
People wouldn't talk about it. People wouldn't, like, openly express certain things. And this movie kind of opened that conversation for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Where it was, because, you know, men were dressed in drag. There was all sorts of strange sexual desires within the actual play and movie. And it took sort of like a light heart approach to it versus, like, you know, when people just don't even talk about it or anything.
Yeah,
along
dark
lines.
And serious and grim and what. It, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a very groundbreaking movie and play, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the New York theater scene was like in the 70s, but I can imagine, yeah, that this is probably way further ahead than what a lot of other playwrights were doing at the time.
Yeah.
Especially since this was written as a lark and probably never really meant to be staged.
I don't know. And again, it's amazing that it's still, to this day, getting played on, like, theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, briefly, and then we can kind of break into, because I don't want to steal too much time away from us talking,
no,
about our experiences with it. Yeah. Like you were saying, like, it's... It, if you listen to a lot of celebrities talk about their coming out experiences, I want to say at least, like, 9 times out of 10, I've heard this movie come up as being critical in someone forming their identity.
Yeah,
and
sort of
coming,
an awakening while,
yeah,
watching,
like,
this movie.
Not coming to terms with it, but, you know, like it helps kind of
Bridge that gap,
actualize who you are. And it's, mm-hmm, a very powerful movie.
It is, yeah.
Even though it's meant to be campy and dumb and kind of surface level, I think the fact that it's so crucial to so many people's identities forming and being a part of them, that it's a much deeper movie or play that it gets credit for.
Yeah, and I can definitely see why it's in the particular hall. That the film hall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it does explore a lot of different themes. Again, you know, sexuality, gender identification, but it also goes into some, like, horror tropes as well, with,
yeah,
like, Frankenstein's monster,
yeah,
and aliens, and, you know, being isolated from reality, because,
yeah,
really, the two main characters, Brad and Janet, are isolated and enter into this whole new different realm where they're more of the outsiders versus the people who are doing these, like, weird things. It's like normal people going into a weird situation where now the weird people are normal and the normal people are weird. So it kind of like spins that on top of its head, which is really cool and interesting, at least to me.
Well, and I mean, they're not like, it's not set during any specific time period, but it's very blatantly supposed to be like the 1950s.
Yeah.
I feel like the way they're dressed and such. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brad and Janet break down on the side of the road during a dark and stormy night. They go into the Frankenstein place, which is a Manor, lovely song. And it's this mansion where this eccentric local weirdo has assembled kind of a group of people around him so that he can unveil his creation, who is the titular Rocky Horror.
Yeah. Who is basically the Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he's created him for...
He wants to make him a man. He wants himself to be a large, muscly man.
Man, yeah.
That puts Charles Atlas to shame, I think, is a line. Yeah.
And it's funny because in the movie, it's revealed that this isn't his first creation, that a cameo... from Meatloaf.
Eddie,
which was also pretty cool because did you listen to like Meatloaf's music at all? Or?
I like Bad Outta Hell. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not him writing it, that's Jim Steinman, but like I tend to stay away from Meatloaf just because he's such a right-wing nut job now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
that's disappointing.
It really is.
Yeah, wow. But yeah, so as we mentioned, there's a lot of songs in this movie as well, and most of the songs are really good.
Oh yeah.
Very catchy. And if you go to a midnight, viewing of it, you'll be singing along as well. And, there's just so much, like going to these midnight, viewings, it's so much fun because you've got like a whole cast of people performing it in front of you. You've got everybody in the audience. They're all participating. And it's just like a fun, silly, all your, not inhibitions, but like all of your prejudgments and stuff go out the window and you're just having a great time.
Yeah. Now, well, and my first experience with this, I think I was saying earlier it was in high school. Now that I think about it, I want to say I was in 6th or 7th grade.
Oh. And
this came on TBS, like one Halloween.
Really? They showed it on...
It was heavily edited.
Okay. Makes sense.
But, I mean, I got really into it. My parents were both just like, this is a weirdo movie. Like, from this, like, okay, sure, yeah.
Was it their first time watching it too, or?
I mean, they didn't watch it with me. Like, I was, they were out taking my brother trick-or-treating, and I was just hanging out, giving out candy.
Okay.
And had it on.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, like, watching it, I was just like, it's obviously, even as a kid, I knew that's heavily edited. Like, I want to see the original.
Yeah.
And so, like, my dad was probably just like, okay, this is weird, but whatever, and like rented it for me because it's an R-rated movie.
It is, yes.
And absolutely fell in love with it. Like, I would make a yearly viewing of it every year at Halloween.
Nice.
From then on, and then when I moved here to Atlanta for undergrad, I don't think I did it freshman year, maybe sophomore year with you and wasn't my wife or even girlfriend at the time, and someone else maybe went to the midnight showing over at the Plaza here in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. My first viewing, so just a little background. My parents are a bunch of hippies. I was raised in a very progressive household, and my father and mother both loved this movie, and I remember, I think I was in freshman year of high school, and they actually rented it, and they're like, do you want
to
watch?
You need to watch this.
Well, I think my mom rented it, and she was like, Stuart, do you want to watch this? I was like, yeah, sure. She's like, this is a really interesting movie. So I watched it, and I was like, wow, this is like very out there and strange and weird, but I fell in love with it too, and I thought this was really cool. And then my freshman year at college, I was majoring in theater, And I was hanging out with a bunch of the theater gang, and we decided that we wanted to put on this production.
Yeah.
So we had to actually go through our school just to make sure that it was okay, because again, it's R-rated and there's a lot of different themes. We went to a liberal school, so they were A-okay with that.
Yeah.
Then you had to like get the rights and everything. We had to pay for that to put it on. And again, the rights weren't that expensive.
Yeah, colleges especially get really reduced rates for, yeah.
I know that we had to put on a couple of like fundraisers and stuff like that to pay for it. But with those few fundraisers, I think we did like 4 or 5, we were able to pay for the entire rights to that movie. So we were able to put it on. As we were putting the production on, we reached out to the group who does it here in Atlanta near one of our local theaters, The Plaza. The group was called Lips Down on Dixie,
which we'll link to in the show notes.
Yeah. They are a fantastic group of actors. We reached out to them to see if maybe they wanted to help us or if they had any particular props, and they were super thrilled to help us. A couple of their actors came and like coached us. Even one of their main actors, we were having trouble trying to find a main lead for Frankenfurter, and he decided that he would help us by playing the part. And he was a professional actor, and it was nice just kind of having him at the reins, because he was able to direct us. I played the part of Brad, which was a lot of fun. And again, we put on the stage production, so we actually had to learn our lines. We had to sing. I will say I'm not the best singer in the world. I'm decent.
You put a lot of feeling behind it.
I think I'm good. I would rate myself maybe a 6 out of 10. But it was nice to have him there because he was professionally trained musician as well. So he would play on the piano and he would allow us to, you know, sing, and he would teach us some of like the notes and everything, which was great. And just like being in that production, you start becoming like a family. You really just like get to like hang out with everybody. And again, you know, it's a weird sort of, with all these different themes, like I was cross-dressing, which was fantastic for me.
Yeah, it's something that you've never really stopped doing, costumes.
That's true. I do do some
broke
cross-plays.
Down that barrier.
Yeah, you know, breaking down barriers, man.
Yeah.
And it was just so much fun. My parents actually went and saw the play, which was hilarious. They were having a great time. I guess I did so well, not to toot my own horn. The production actually asked me to perform with them.
Sound on Dixie.
Yeah,
nice.
Doing like the shadow casting.
See, I didn't know that. I thought that it was like a showing of the movie at school, where we went to school, and then you guys did a shadow cast in
No.
front of it. You actually did it at the Plaza.
No, so we did it at our school.
Yeah.
It was a production. It was the play production.
Gotcha. Okay.
It was the actual play production. So we were on stage doing the play production, which, you know, is a little different, but similar to the movie. But yeah, we didn't have that, I guess, experience of just, like, mouthing the words while the movie was playing. We actually said the lines, sang the songs. That's why I was saying that, like, I learned those songs. I know
really cool.
most of Brad's songs by heart, especially the first song when he's proposing.
Damn it, Janet.
Yeah. I love you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to make you guys sit through that entire song as I sing it. Maybe. No, I'm not. But yeah, so I learned that entire song. It was just so much fun because, again, you know, we had the people down, or the people from Lips Down on Dixie helping us out. We had a bunch of people from our school doing most of the performances. It was just, you really get to, like, know each other through that play production. Really, you get to know each other through any play production, but with this one being so intimate and interesting, you get to know a lot of people.
Yeah.
Not in the biblical sense, but...
yeah.
Yeah. You just, you get to, you know, have fun and hang out. I remember after our final production, like our final stage production, we all hung out with the Lips Down on Dixie people, and we watched the movie. And so when we were doing it at our school, a lot of people didn't know, like, the yelling out part. Again, it was the stage production, so it was a little bit different. So when we were doing the production, we didn't have that interaction from the crowd. Though at the end, the final song, you know, when they're all kind of spread out, we go out into the audience and, like, sit on somebody's lap as we were singing. So, and we're at that part, we're all, like, cost-stressed. I had, like, fishnets on, a corset on, and everything.
Yeah, I think everyone does at the end.
At the end, yeah. So I remember when my father came, I was sitting on his lap singing to him, all cross-dressed, and he was just having a great time. But, yeah, so in the play, there wasn't, like, that audience interaction that you normally get during the movie. But on our final production, after we were done, we sat down with the Lips Down on Dixie folks, and we watched the movie.
Yeah.
Because we had the theater, and we brought, like, a screen and a movie projector, and we watched it, and that's when we did the whole, like, responses and stuff.
That's
and
cool.
That was actually my first time doing the responses. Because, again, I had only known the movie from my family. I didn't really go out and see the midnight viewing of it. So that was so much fun. Then Lips Down on Dixie asked me to be part of their entourage, which I was. I was like, yes, sign me up. So I was Brad for a good, I think, 4 or 5 months.
Oh.
Until just, like, with school and everything, and you have to be there every Friday night.
Yeah,
life
kind of
got,
yeah. Yeah. It's a big commitment.
It is a big commitment.
Everything else. Yeah.
And that's why I'm so surprised. So I occasionally still go down and do the midnight viewing of it, especially during Halloween. That's like their big draw. The theater is usually packed.
Yeah.
But the same guy who helped us out back, way back when we were in college, is still there, still doing his performance, and it's still amazing. And it blows my mind to still see him at that theater, like, performing his heart out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I mean, this is an important movie for a lot of people for a variety of reasons.
It is.
It's, like I said, it's one of only two movies we've done so far that have been put into the National Film Registry. Like, it is a big, important film to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I assuming it's because Fox obviously owns the rights to it, but, like, you see it crop up on, like, shows like Glee, which I never watched, but they had a Rocky Horror
I didn't know that.
Special. They put out the album of them doing it for their Halloween special.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, it's a big movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like, the music's great, and just all the themes are there and very interesting. If you live in Atlanta, I cannot highly recommend going to the Plaza to one of the Friday night midnight viewings of it and just participating in it. Even, I know, so when you go there for your first time, they classify you as a virgin.
Yeah.
And even while you're waiting in line to get your tickets,
there's usually hyping going on.
Yeah, so people from the group will usually be there hyping it up, like, getting you excited. They put these on all the versions' heads. There's a lot of participation, too. There's a couple of scenes where you have to, like, they'll ask people to come up, and they'll usually ask for the versions to come up, and they'll do, you know, like, trying to pop balloon or something along yeah. those lines, where they'll get you up and they'll get you interactive or interacting with them. There is a fantastic song called The Time Warp, where they'll get you up and it's just a dance, and everybody will be dancing in the aisles, and it's just so much fun. And you get to, like, hang out with a bunch of cool people, and you get to, like, interact with people that you probably, you know, didn't even know would love this stuff, and you get to make great friends, and I'm super happy that I had the opportunity to work with this group, Lips Down on Dixie, as well as do it as a stage performance at my school, because it is definitely a different feel for both of them.
Yeah.
And I was happy to have that kind of opportunity to both experience both versions of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it was so much fun, like, performing and just working with everybody, because everybody's super open, everybody's super nice, and you really get to, like, become a family, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I also wanted to talk a little bit about the sequels.
Yeah, I did not know that there were sequels. This is a surprise to me.
I think we watched it together.
Did we?
When we were living together, because I used to have it.
I do not recall this at all.
It came out in 81, and it's actually called Shock Treatment.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not ringing any bells whatsoever.
It's not very good, in my opinion. Okay. It's got the same cast. It doesn't have Susan Sarandon. I think Barry Bostwick is not in it either. But it's about, like, the dangers of television and all of that. Yeah.
Oh, that kind of rings a bell a little bit.
Yeah, like, there's this TV facility that's built in Denton, and all of the people of Denton go to it, and it's what people who are scared of television think being in a TV audience is like.
Oh.
So, yeah. Huh. Like, hence the Shock Treatment thing.
Yeah.
In 91, they were supposed to make one called Revenge of the Old Queen. It was never completed.
Okay.
The script, I mean, it was never completed.
Huh.
And then in 2000, they announced that they were doing Rocky Horror: The Second Coming. Maybe. I think it's doubtful at this point, since it's almost 20 years later.
Yeah.
And there's nothing past the first act in script form. Richard O'Brien is just, like, done with it.
Well, that's the thing, is Rocky Horror is so unique. It was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can really replicate that.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine having the first thing you're known for be something like the Rocky Horror Show or the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
And then having to follow that up.
Yeah, like, because
that has got to be... And that's probably why Shock Treatment didn't do as well, is because, one, I don't think it's as good.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun, but I'm not a huge fan of it. And I can see that kind of breaking your creative process and being like, okay, I guess I was just this one thing. But, like, if that one thing is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, like, you've helped and guided so many people that I think it's worth it if that's the only big thing you ever do.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel, and this is just me feeling something, this isn't fact, this is opinion, that when you try to do these sequels, it just kind of chips away value from your original vision, because unless it comes from such an interesting place or you're telling such an interesting story, sometimes sequels just don't need to be told.
Sure.
It feels kind of like maybe a cash grab or a fame grab or something along those lines.
Sure.
And it does kind of chip away value from your original idea or thought. But again, just my own personal opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad that this film and stage production is in this world. Again, this was something that I chose because it was a big factor of part of my life. It was interesting. It was something like this was one of I did other stage plays again in like high school and a little bit in college and everything along those lines. But I will say this was one of the like more fun stage plays that I did just because like everything's kind of silly and wacky and loose. And you know, I've done Shakespearean theater, and that's very like dry and very like exact. And you know, I'm sure a lot of listeners can tell that I'm kind of a silly guy and like I like to joke around and stuff like that. And like there's none of that in Shakespearean theater, especially during like practices. Sometimes you want to like riff one or like have a clever joke and people are like, no, stick to the script, you know, let's keep on moving, we don't have much time. But when I was at Rocky Horror, you know, we were all like not goofing off all the time, but like we could have that moment of like goofing off, of being silly and stuff like that. I remember, I don't know if I should say this, but you can edit this out if you want.
if it's the one I think, maybe not.
I don't know. I was shaving my legs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I, again, we were in fishnets, and I don't have, like, super hairy legs, but I was like, I'm going to shave my legs so they look better in fishnets. And I remember somebody else who was in the production, and he was like, so, Stuart, like, I'm also going to shave my legs. How high do you shave up? I was like, you shave up as high as you need to shave up. Like, you don't need to go, like, any higher or stuff. And we're all just, like, joking around and stuff like that. And it was just, it was fun because, you know, you're a family and...
I'm sure that was an eye-opening experience because I had never shaved my legs until we did that drag performance.
Yeah, that was...
For Youth Pride.
Uh-huh.
And I was shocked. I have a fair amount of hair on my legs, but like I had no idea it took that long to get that much hair off.
Yeah, I actually had shaved my legs previously in high school when I did some cross-dressing for we had a cross-dressing day at high school where so it was like Spirit Week where there would be different themes. One theme was like dress up as your favorite hero from media or something like that. And my buddy ended up dressing up as Dr. Strangelove. He had a wheelchair and everything, which was hilarious. I dressed up as Hugh Hefner. I had like the smoking jacket and whatnot. But then the next day was like cross-dressing day. So basically I wore my like sister's clothes and I shaved my legs. And that was the first time I've shaved my legs, and you'll learn a lot.
Did cross-dressing day, which is actually a really cool idea, did it culminate in, like, a Sadie Hawkins dance? Like, why was there a...
No, it was just Spirit Week, where every day was a different theme, and, you know, you had, like, 70s day, where you dressed up in 70s garb. You know, at the very end on Friday was Spirit Day, where you dress up in, like, your school colors. But, yeah, one day was cross-dressing day, which, again, I went to a public high school. And you would...
Yeah.
An inner-city public high school in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's surprising that that was done.
Yeah, I know. But, like, a lot of people participated in it, so that was kind of interesting.
Huh. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And it was very progressive.
Yeah.
But, it was, just... Being in that group really was a lot of fun, and I don't think I would have traded the experience for anything.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts on Rocky Horror?
Definitely go down, check them out. Lips Down on Dixie. They
look in the show notes.
Yeah, they perform every Friday night down over at the Plaza. And other than that, no. I think that's about okay. it for all the experiences I've had.
Well, yeah, I give it a thumbs up, two thumbs up.
I definitely give it two thumbs up.
And yeah, that's our coverage of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should give it a watch if, I mean, it's readily available in so many places that you should be able to find a copy of it. Where your library probably has a copy of it.
Probably.
Now, the book club book is Dr. Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The Facebook has Nerd Fight going on.
Yeah, as check well that out.
As convention coverage. As we get approved for these, we add those there in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see where we'll be at. And then the next week's episode will be the Alien Quadrilogy. Movies Ooh. 1 through 4. We're not doing Alien versus Predator or Prometheus
yeah.
or Alien Covenant, even though Alien Covenant is fantastic.
Yeah, and it's that's just probably, the ones
with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be a longer one since we're going to be covering four movies. Yeah, which is interesting because I've only seen the first Alien, so I'm going to be watching the other three. And they'll be fresh. They'll be fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
It'll be hot takes. Hot takes from Stuart.
Fresh hot takes.
That's right.
What's with this alien suit? This is offensive to sea creatures. So, yeah, with that, we'll see you guys next week. And what were we saying? Were we saying stay frosty or stay golden?
You were saying that. I was saying be kind, rewind.
Stay golden, pony boys.
Later.
Bye.